comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show on this July the 4th. We're here because you have a right to know. And frankly, you matter. At least you matter to us, and I think you matter to the cosmos. As I said, it's the 4th of July, so for all of my friends in the United States of America, happy 4th of July. For those of you around the world, if you do not happen to know about 4th of July, it is the birthday of America, so happy birthday, America. Tonight, we have a change of plans, because our scheduled guest became ill and actually spent most of last night in the emergency room. And we've rescheduled, we've postponed her appearance here tonight. I know many of you were looking forward to that, and let me tell you, you can look forward to Wednesday, okay? That's the plan now, is she will be with us on Wednesday. And we were going to be talking about tonight, and we will be talking about on Wednesday night with her, her experiences in this whole thing about alien hybridization. I know some people think there's nothing to that. Some people think it's not real. Some people think it is real. Well, you know, this is a person who says, look, it's real, I know, it's happened to me, and she's going to share her story with us. But that will be on Wednesday night, and, you know, I apologize for postponing, but, you know, people cannot help when they get ill, and, you know, if it happens, it happens. And she very graciously said she thought she would be feeling well enough by Wednesday to be with us. So we have her scheduled for then, and you'll want to tune in and hear that show because, you know, I think that's something all of us are at least curious about, and that is there really an alien hybridization program? If there is such a program, what is it all about? What's happening? And what is it all about? Well, this is July the 4th. As I said, we have a change of plans. Some of you are able to get out and see fireworks tonight, and a lot of places are hosting fireworks displays tonight. But some of you are in places that are not hosting them, or perhaps you've got bad weather and they've had to call it off. Well, we're going to have some fireworks for you when we come back from this first break, and a really special presentation as well that go along with this fireworks display. It's about 11 and a half minutes of fireworks. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Hey, if you are not yet subscribed to K-Files, our free weekly newsletter, be sure you do. Go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and subscribe. It's free. We'll be back right after this. Thank you. welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and our July the 4th program. We are going to go open line a little bit later in the show, but as I promised you, we have some fireworks for you, and that's not a play on words. It is a fireworks show, and there's a presentation that goes with it. Now, listen, this is a compilation of video and audio made by a lot of different people, several different people, and I've put them together in a presentation. And let me tell you what this is. And, you know, look, we've got lots of our people in uniform that listen to this show. And I think you will especially enjoy what you're about to see. But a lot of people around the world have no idea at all and no reason to have an idea as to the reverence that Americans have for our flag and for our national anthem. As a matter of fact, in many countries, their flag, their national anthem is no big deal to them, and that's okay. But there are reasons why when you watch America, you see great reverence for the flag and for our national anthem. A lot of Americans coming along now are not taught these things. I was taught this in school, but I was taught a lot of things in school that they don't teach in school anymore. And about our history, about who we are and why we have the principles that we have and so forth. Well, this is the with the fireworks, this is the story of how we got our national anthem called the Star Spangled Banner.
There was a lawyer once. His name was Francis Scott Key. He penned a song that I'm sure you're aware of. You've seen it. It's in most hymnals throughout our churches. It's called the National Anthem. It is our song as an American. We go, however, to a ball game. We stand in our church services and we sing the words of that song, and they float over our minds and our lips, and we don't even realize what we're singing. Most of us have memorized it as a child, but we've never really thought about what it means. Let me tell you a story. Francis Scott Key was a lawyer in Baltimore. The colonies were engaged in vicious conflict with the mother country, Britain. Because of this conflict and the protractedness of it, they had accumulated prisoners on both sides. The American colonies had prisoners and the British had prisoners. And the American government initiated a move. They went to the British and they said, "Let us negotiate for the release of these prisoners." They said, "We want to send a man out to discuss this with you." They were holding the American prisoners in boats about 1,000 yards offshore. And they said, "We want to send a man by the name of Francis Scott Key. He will come out and negotiate to see if we can make a mutual exchange." On the appointed day, in a rowboat, he went out to this boat and he negotiated with the British officials. And they reached a conclusion that men could be exchanged on a one-for-one basis. Francis Scott Key, jubilant with the fact that he'd been successful, went down below in the boats, and what he found was a cargo hold full of humanity, men. And he said, "Men, I've got news for you tonight. You're free." He said, "Tonight I have negotiated successfully your return to the colonies." He said, "You'll be taken out of this boat, out of this filth, out of your chains." As he went back up on board to arrange for their passage to the shore, the admiral came and he said, "We have a slight problem." He said, "We will still honor our commitment to release these men, but it'll be merely academic after tonight. It won't matter." And Francis Scott Key said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, Mr. Key," he said, "tonight we have laid an ultimatum upon the colonies. Your people will either capitulate and lay down the colors of that flag that you think so much of, or you see that fort right over there, Fort Henry? He said, "We're going to remove it from the face of the earth." He said, "How are you going to do that?" He said, "If you will, scan the horizon of the sea." And as he looked, he could see hundreds of little dots. And he said, "That's the entire British war fleet." He said all of the gunpowder, all of the armament is being called upon to demolish that fort. It will be here within striking distance in a matter of about 2.5 hours. He said the war is over. These men would be free anyway. He said, you can't shell that fort. He said, that's a large fort. He said, it's full of women and children. He says, it's predominantly not a military fort. They said, don't worry about it. They said, we've left them a way out. He said, what's that? He said, do you see that flag way up on the rampart? He said, we have told them that if they will lower that flag, the shelling will stop immediately. And we'll know that they've surrendered, and you'll now be under British rule. Francis Scott Key went down below and told the men what was about to happen. And they said, how many ships? He said, hundreds. The ships got closer. Francis Scott Key went back up on top and he said, men, I'll shout down to you what's going on as we watch. As twilight began to fall, and as the haze hung over the ocean as it does at sunset, suddenly the British war fleet unleashed. He says the sound was deafening. There were so many guns that there were no reliefs. He said it was absolutely impossible to talk or hear. He said suddenly the sky, although dark, was suddenly lit. And he says from down below, all he could hear the men, the prisoners, saying was, tell us where the flag is. What have they done with the flag? Is the flag still flying over the rampart? Tell us. 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours into the shelling. Every time the bomb would explode and it would be close to the flag, they could see the flag in the illuminated red glare of that bomb. And Francis Scott Key would report down to the men below, it's still up. It's not down. The admiral came and he said, your people are insane. He said, what's the matter with them? He said, don't they understand this is an impossible situation? Francis Scott Key said he remembered what George Washington had said. He said, the thing that sets the American Christian apart from all other people in the world is he will die on his feet before he'll live on his knees. The admiral said, we have now instructed all of the guns to focus on the rampart to take that flag down. He said, we don't understand something. Our reconnaissance tells us that flag has been hit directly again and again and again, and yet it's still flying. We don't understand that. But he said, now we're about to bring every gun for the next 3 hours to bear on that point. Francis Scott Key said the barrage was unmerciful. All that he could hear was the men down below praying. The prayer. God, keep that flag flying where we last saw it. Sunrise came. He said there was a heavy mist hanging over the land, but the rampart was tall enough. There stood the flag, completely nondescript, in shreds. The flagpole itself was at a crazy angle, the flag was still at the top. Francis Scott Key went aboard and immediately went into Fort Henry to see what had happened. And what he'd found had happened was that that flagpole and that flag had suffered repetitious direct hits. And when hit had fallen, but men, fathers, knew what it meant for that flag to be on the ground. Although knowing that all of the British guns were trained on it, walked over and held it up humanly until they died. Their bodies were removed and others took their place. Francis Scott Key said what held that flagpole in place at that unusual angle were patriots' bodies. He penned the song, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming? Or the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that the flag was still there? Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet fly and wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave? The debt was demanded. The price, it was paid.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the pavement's fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly screaming, and the rockets ring clear, the bombs bursting in air. That our flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land
idle? What is it that gentlemen wish? What would they have? Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death!
Well, there you have it. Fireworks for the 4th of July and the story of how we got our national anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner. And for all of our friends around the world, why Americans are so passionate about that flag and about that national anthem. Speaking of times past in America, and since this is a show that deals with the strange and the unexplained, do you have any idea at all the story of the first UFO report filed in America? Anybody know? What year do you think it was? Some of you think, oh, it must have been 1947, like Roswell, right? Well, it wasn't. Well, some of you know about some UFO reports that happened a little further back in the late 1890s. Yeah, well, no, that wasn't it either. The very first UFO report filed in the Americas, it was not the United States yet. A long time before it would be the United States. It was in 1638. In 1638, the governor of Massachusetts was Jonathan Winthrop. And Winthrop kept very, very copious journals because he realized that someone needed to record what was going on in this brand new place called America. You know, they called it the New World, and it was the New World for a reason. I mean, there's a reason why they called it the New World, and that's because they had just recently arrived. So, 1638. In 1638, the governor of Massachusetts, the colony, was not a state, it was a colony, recorded in his journal that a man by the name of Mr. Everells reported a very strange incident to him. He says that this man was a man of, he was a very respectable man and a man of great gravity. In other words, he was saying this is a credible witness. And this man told of he and two others being, of him and two others being out, or three others, being out in a boat on what they called the Muddy River. Now, the Muddy River ran between Boston and what is today Charlestown. Then it was called Charlton. And they were out on the river, apparently fishing. And they saw, suddenly, a bright light, and at whatever distance, there's no way in the description to tell what distance away it was, but they said it covered about, you know, 3 by 3 by 3, I think is what it was, feet. When it stood still, according to this report written by the governor, written by Jonathan Winthrop. More on that when we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and our 4th of July stock of stories. They don't all have to do with America and they don't all have to do with the 4th of July, I assure you. But we're talking about this first UFO report in the history of the United States of America. Actually, not in the United States, in the history of America. Same continent, same area, but the United States was not yet born, 1638. And so the governor, Jonathan Winthrop, governor of Massachusetts, recorded that this Mr. James Everell reported this to him, and I was wrong, it's not 3 feet by 3 feet by 3 feet, it's 3 yards. So that's 9 feet by 9 feet by 9 feet. And it was hovering over the river. And it was basically just light. But, and this was in the evening, but it says when it hovered, it got brighter. And then when it flew, when it moved, it dimmed back down to where it had started from. But it morphed its shape. Now, he didn't use the word morph. Mr. Everill reported to him that it changed its shape and contracted into a shape something like a swine. So here it is, this thing of light, and then it contracts into, we would say, an ovoid. And then when it flew, it says it flew like an arrow being shot. In other words, it was so fast that you could barely see it. It was just gone. Now, the interesting thing about this is that, well, that's interesting, but the really interesting thing is it flew up and down the muddy river. It would fly towards Charlton and back up toward Boston, and towards Charlton, back up towards Boston. And on some of its flights, it would stop and hover and get brighter and then contract back into that shape again and take off like an arrow. And this lasted for 2 to 3 hours. I bet you didn't know that in the ancient records, they're not really ancient, but in the old records of the Americas, there is a UFO report. Well, there is, and that's it. Now, you can imagine, though, some really brilliant PhD archaeologist about 400 years from now finding those records, and they'll come up with a theory that people back then were very superstitious and very religious and apparently attached some kind of religious significance to a swine because they had this mythological story about a flying swine, a flying pig. That's the way they'll do it. You know they will. Of course, you and I know that's not what he was saying. He was just using a shape that all he could think of was it's sort of shaped like a swine, kind of an ovoid shape. He didn't have the word ovoid. They didn't have the word flying saucers. He described it in terms that he understood. Now, he was a tanner of hides. He worked with tanning hides. So he worked with the carcasses of animals. And the only shape that could come to his mind that was something like what he saw was that of a swine. So anyway, that's the first UFO report in the history of the Americas. And the first one written down. There are other UFO reports, though. Actually, pictures of UFOs that go much further back, maybe thousands of years back, and they're chiseled into rock. We call them petroglyphs, and we make up stories about their mythology, too. Just like the archaeologists 400 years from now, totally out of touch with the context of the times. You know, it's pretty difficult for us, just thinking back to 1638. We're not in touch with the context of those times. But we have read enough about it, we've heard enough about it, that we can kind of understand what the man was trying to describe. Well, 400 years from now, that won't be the case. So here we are, standing thousands of years distant from those petroglyphs, and our experts make up these hoo-ha stories about, you know, these people were superstitious and mythological and all of that, when really probably all you're looking at in those petroglyphs is you're just looking at an actual, if you will, a snapshot in stone of an event that happened. And without any mythological stuff going with it. It's probably just a snapshot of an event. They didn't have cameras and film, but they had rocks, and they would put little tiny chips into the side of a rock, a big rock, and chip out the picture of what had happened. So we've got those, and those are all over the world, but we have them in America as well. So really the first UFO reports in the Americas are in those petroglyphs. The first written report is written by the governor of the colony of Massachusetts in 1638. That's your history lesson for tonight. I hope you're having an absolutely wonderful July the 4th. I hope you're having a great time, and I hope you've gotten to see friends and family, and I hope that it's all been safe and wonderful for you, and that it will continue to be through the night. We're going to do our best to help keep you safe and help you have a wonderful evening. After all, if you're listening to the Kevin Smith Show, it's not absolutely certain that you're not driving. You may be listening on your cell phone or your smartphone. And that's good. But if you are, be careful out there. There are a lot of people out there who have no regard for other humans, and they drive drunk. And even some who aren't drunk drive crazy. They just get holiday nuts, and they do things that are crazy, and people get hurt. So be careful out there. For the rest of you, we're going to help keep you safe, because you are at home or in your office or at work, and you're listening either over the radio or over a computer, and you're not out on the road, so that's good. All right, as I said, we will open up the telephone lines in just a moment. I do want to bring you one more, at least one more, really cool story. Now, this was sent to me by one of our listeners. The link was sent to me by one of our listeners. And I've already posted this in our forums. So some of you have already read it. You're already familiar with this. You hear me say all the time, you hear me say that, you know what? This show is a cooperative effort between you and me. It's not just me doing a show. And so our new listeners may not know this. It's not just me doing a show. You send me suggestions for guests. You send me material to read. You send me links to things to look at. You make suggestions of where we ought to go with the show. This is one of those suggestions, all right? And it's really phenomenally interesting. Now, what we're talking about here is an article that appeared in Pravda. Pravda formerly was the official publication of the Communist Party in Russia. Well, Pravda has published a report or an article that says that a team of anthropologists has found a mysterious burial in the jungle near the city of Kigali, Rwanda, in Central Africa. Let me summarize for you. What they found was the graves of about 200 individuals out in the jungle. And they thought at first, well, we have stumbled upon some ancient civilization, some ancient city. But it turned out not to be the case. It's just a cemetery. There's no ancient city around it that they have been able to find. It's got about 200 individuals that are buried there. These individuals are about 7 feet tall. It says that the bodies were perfectly preserved in 40 communal graves. In other words, a communal grave is another way of saying a mass grave. So in about 40 graves, there are 200 bodies. It says perfectly preserved. 7 feet tall. Their heads disproportionately large. They have no mouth and no eyes. Does that blow your mind? I mean, here we are on July the 4th where fireworks are going off. Are fireworks going off in your mind with that one? They believe that these anthropologists believe that these creatures were members, possibly, of an alien landing party, although they found no other evidence of a landing or a crashed spaceship or anything like that. But they don't think that they are from here. That's just a little bit mind-blowing. Now, that report was filed on June the 24th. So we're only looking, you know, a few days ago that report was filed. And what do you think about that? What do you think those are? 7 feet tall, bodies perfectly preserved? I'm not really sure if they mean the bodies or if they mean the skeletons. But if it's the bodies are perfectly preserved, you ought to be able to get some DNA. And there's a mystery right there. How can these bodies be perfectly preserved? They estimate that these graves are at least 500 years old. Now, they may be much older than that, but what they're estimating is that at the very least, they have to be 500 years old. How could bodies be perfectly preserved for 500 years? But if they are, you ought to be able to get some DNA and do some testing and find out if they are human. And if they are, that's really going to blow a hole in the side of the Darwin ship, because that will be a whole different branch of the human race that developed without eyes and no mouth. Isn't that what it says? That's what it says. The heads are disproportionately large, and they have no mouth, no nose, and no eyes. Are these things some kind of robots? If so, are they biological robots? And did they get here to Terra? That's the name of this planet, you know. Did they get here to Terra and come down with some virus that they had no immunity to? What's the deal? We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and our 4th of July online party, I guess you could say. We're just having a good time here taking a look at some of these very strange stories about very strange things. And we want to open up the telephone lines. For those of you who joined us late and you were expecting we were going to be doing a show about hybrids, and that I have a guest, would have a guest that is going to talk about being a part of that. I made the announcement at the beginning of the show. Let me make it again now, because we do have some folks, I'm sure, who have joined us late. Our guest became very ill suddenly and had to go to the emergency room and spent most of last night in the emergency room. And so we've postponed until Wednesday. We're going to try for Wednesday. So we're going to do that show, and that guest is coming on to talk with us, but we've had to postpone due to illness. I almost said unexpected illness, but I think really almost all illness is unexpected, isn't it? if we knew it was coming, we'd avoid it somehow. But anyway, I'm going to open up the telephone lines, and it is open line live. We don't have to talk about any of the things we've done here on the show tonight. You can talk about any topic within our genre. As long as it's about the strange and unexplained, it's your choice. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. Again, that's 623-444-5889. And the telephone lines are open, all right? So don't linger and hold back. I suspect that you will have plenty of opportunity to talk tonight and to say what you want, because a lot of folks are out watching fireworks and maybe just getting home about the time the show is over. So if you've never, ever called me before, this is a great night to do it. I think you'll be able to get in. I don't think there will be a great problem with you getting in. But what do you think about what we've done so far, what we've talked about so far on the show tonight? You know, that first UFO report in America, you may think, well, that's no big deal. Yeah, it is actually a big deal, because it was the governor of Massachusetts that wrote the report and said the witness was credible. And in fact, he said, explanations. He actually brought up what we call swamp gas. He said an explanation of swamp gas, although he used a different word, would naturally come to mind were it not that the witness were so respectable. So he says this witness is credible, and that this is what the man said. That's an important report. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming. And yes, I was going to work tonight until this morning.
Oh, okay. And it all changed.
Yeah, it's the fun of being on call as needed.
So what's on your mind, Brent?
I will say this about the Russian. I read that article somewhere. I will say this. At least they're honest.
Elaborate on that a little bit. What do you mean, at least they are honest?
They reported what they saw, and they didn't try to dismiss it as something they didn't, they just reported it.
Uh-huh.
They didn't say this is some kind of ritual burial or something like that, or I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's very amazing to me that at least on the topics that we talk about, you know, the paranormal and the strange and unexplained, the news media in both Russia and China seem to be wide open. You know, they're not promoting it. They just report it as they would any other news. And that's pretty amazing, because we have been told all our lives that the press is controlled there, and there's no freedom of the press, there's no freedom, you know. You know, on some things, apparently there is freedom of the press. Mm-hmm. And much more than there is here. There's no freedom of the press on that topic here.
No. Now, I'm going to ask you, that question I posed for you last time, that email.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I have spent a lot of time working with burns and open wounds and people who are in a lot of pain. For me to do that, because I was one who was sitting with them while they were in the whirlpool, getting and I was doing the helping with dressing changes and debriefing and all that stuff. They're in a lot of pain. Sometimes too much morphine is not enough. Now, I am of the opinion that if, as they say, some of these aliens, some people say that some of these alien races are interested in us because of our emotional range.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're going to be doing these experiments on us, and they know they're going to be creating a lot of pain, they've got to create something that could essentially what it gets down to is, do you think the Greys are biological robots that cannot experience emotion?
I think some are. Of course, Brent, I don't know any Greys.
I don't either.
Based on the reports of people who have had interactions with them, I think it's safe to say that some of them, perhaps most of them, are kind of biological robots. But we've also been told by people who have had interactions with them that there is a race of Greys that are not the same. They're taller, and they're much more like us. So, you know, who knows? I'll tell you this. I think a fish, if he thinks, who knows how a fish thinks, but if he thinks like we do, or anywhere even approaching the way we think, a fish would assume we have no emotions.
Yeah.
Because, listen, I like to fish. It doesn't bother me. I don't have emotional queasiness about a hook going through a fish's jaw.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think, and I have no queasiness about, we say, cleaning a fish. What that means is killing the fish, gutting the fish, and getting the scales or skin off of the fish so that you can cook it and eat it. And I don't have to block any emotions. I don't have emotional upheavals over that. And maybe the aliens look at us like we look at fish.
Or deer or elk or any other animal. Because I have seen deer mourn the loss of a buck that got ran over.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, animals are incredible. They are really not as stupid as we think they are, except for ostriches. They are.
I will make it ostriches are pretty dang dumb.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. But, you know, we say they are dumb animals because they can't speak. That's not true. They do speak. They speak to each other. And in fact, a new study has come out showing that songbirds actually have a grammar.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's regional. That grammar is regional. Brent, you want to hang on for just a minute?
Yeah.
All right. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Okay, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We have on the line with us Brent from Wyoming. And we were, Brent, we were talking about animals and that there's a new report out that shows that songbirds actually have a grammar and that it's regional. In other words, they speak with an accent, if you will. And so animals communicate. We say they're dumb because they can't speak our language, but maybe they look at us and say we're dumb because we don't speak their language.
That?
I had your volume turned down. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
So what did you say about that?
I would tend to agree with that. Animals, if I was an animal and I watched you in human behavior, I would say, are there any intelligent humans?
Well, our behavior, you know, there's a difference between intelligence and behavior.
Yeah, but when you watch the humans for long enough, you kind of wonder.
Yeah. But, you know, some of the really, really, really highly intelligent people on this planet have really bad behavior.
This is true.
Yeah. All right. Well, Brent, thank you for the call. I don't know what to say about the Greys. I think some of them are biological robots. They just run on a program.
And that might be what the Russians found, a version of them.
Yeah, it was 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
Maybe it was an early version, and the aliens that built them figured out, hey, we could put more of these critters in a spaceship and send them to Earth if they were smaller. Maybe that's the case. Yeah, so let's cut them in half and make them 3.5 feet tall.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, thanks for the call. 623-444-5889 is the number to call. And if you're outside of the United States and you're outside of Canada, that means if you call that number, it will work. However, it is an international long-distance call, and those are not cheap. Okay? So, realizing that they are not cheap, we have something called a flash message option on the website. If you go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show, and right above that picture is a link that says Flash Message. So if you're outside the USA and you're outside of Canada, that is one way for you to participate in the show tonight. We'd love to hear from you, or you can call us. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. Okay, we do not hear the caller, and all the volume is where it should be. I guess the caller has some technical difficulties. You know, both of these stories that I brought up are interesting. All on their own, by themselves, they're interesting. But that one about the first UFO report written in the United States, it's not the first UFO seen in the United States or in America, but it's the first report that got written down. Well, that deal, you know, what I said about 400 years from now when archaeologists come across that report, can you even speculate what they're going to say about people back then and what people believed? They're going to say they believed in flying pigs. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike.
Hey, I knew a Gray.
Did you?
Her name was Nancy. So there you are.
Nancy Gray, okay.
And, you know, talking about this paranormal stuff, you know how you're talking about these people... that out in over there where you're from, talking about those big bats, and they eat them, and they don't question whether or not they exist. They know, and they eat them.
I've eaten them.
Yeah. Well, in a time to come, if we survive, you know, there won't be any such thing as paranormal. Everything will be normal because our superstitions will have been overcome.
Well, I think that's true for probably the majority of people. I think that is true.
Well, and I think it probably a small percentage of people right now don't see anything as paranormal. They just see it as an extension of some part of themselves that most people can't reach or don't understand.
Well, yeah. You know, the definition of paranormal is anything for which there is no scientific explanation.
Right, like my existence, for instance.
Yeah. There's no scientific explanation for the word life. We're not even sure how to define that word. We know it when we see it. We understand when we're looking at something that is alive. But as far as being able to define the word life, it's very, very difficult to define. And consequently, there are people who are defining computers as living entities. Now,
well, would we define life more as alive rather as animated?
I don't think you can, because life itself is a thing can be animated by the wind, but life is a force that is cosmic. It's mystical. It's undefinable.
Okay. I don't have a problem with any of that. In fact, I agree.
Yeah. And so you've heard me say that almost everything in our universe is paranormal based on that definition. The definition being things for which there are no scientific explanations. Well, virtually everything in the universe has no scientific explanation. It has theories, lots of theories, lots of speculation, but no real definite explanation.
And you know, when science can't explain it, when it doesn't fit their little box, then they just try to dismiss it.
Mm-hmm. A lot of scientists do. However, there's a growing number of scientists that are really kind of opening up to, you know, we don't know as much as we thought we knew. And so there's a growing group of those guys. But listen, did you know the moon is paranormal?
Well, I guess you could say that.
Yeah, you can, because they don't know where it came from.
Right. It wasn't originally part of our Earth.
Yeah, it's too big to have been captured by our gravitational field. They don't know where it came from. They don't know how or why it stays in the orbit that it's in, and how it is in a lockstep with Earth, so that it is rotating on its axis at exactly the speed it has to in order to keep the same face toward the Earth as it orbits the Earth. And,
right.
You know, I mean, this whole thing about the moon is truly paranormal.
You know, the fact that we see the same side all the time because of that ability to be lockstepped, if you will, almost makes the average person think that it doesn't revolve. In fact, we know it does.
Yeah. And, you know, you can prove that it revolves on its axis if you'll take an orange and a magic marker and put a big X on the orange. Now hold the X toward you, and then hold your left hand up and take the orange in your right hand. Now start to revolve the orange to orbit it around your left hand. If you don't spin the orange, that X goes out of sight as it comes around your left hand.
Right.
You have to spin the orange to keep the X facing your left hand.
Exactly.
So the moon has to spin on its axis in order to keep the same face toward us at all times. But it does it at such a precise rate that it never shows us anything except that one side of the moon.
You wonder sometimes if somebody planned it that way, don't you?
Well, it certainly seems, the precision of it certainly seems to point towards some design. Whether a person wants to say that's the creator, or if a person wants to say that is an artificial satellite, and there seems to be some evidence that it may be.
There, it doesn't matter which hemisphere you're in or which side of the Earth either. It's always going to be looking at the same side, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So we can't get around to look on the other side.
Well, that's true. You have to send a rocket around there and send a spaceship around there. We've done that, or at least NASA says we have, and the astronauts have found some very amazing things on that other side of the moon. And so have unmanned satellites found some
right.
amazing things over there on the other side of the moon.
That's true. And, you know, if it was up to NASA, you know how I feel about NASA. But if it was up to them, you'd never see any of that information.
I don't know. They're the ones that have released the pictures.
Well, I think it's only because of the fact that, like you say, that Indian satellite and some of these other satellites, the owners of those satellites have come out and made these statements. So NASA looks pretty bad if it doesn't go along with it.
Yeah. Yeah, NASA's kind of painted into a corner now of pretty much having to divulge the truth because of the other countries that have space programs.
So what we need to do then is just be patient and let the other countries disclose the truths that we've been trying to get NASA to disclose for 40 years.
Well, yeah, in a way we need to be patient. In another way we don't. You know, this show is all about, it's partly exists because we're not patient. We want to know. And shows this show and shows like this take a look at whatever is available in the way of evidence. And then, you know, we start trying to piece together the picture of what's really going on. And slowly, we've pretty much pieced together the picture. The evidence is overwhelming enough so that NASA doesn't need to continue denying.
Well, it doesn't need to, but it's just like some of the other organizations that control the release of information. It's usually the older people in the group that do it, not the younger ones.
Yeah, yeah. But it's getting done. I noticed that NASA took aim at Edgar Mitchell.
Yeah.
They have filed a $1 million lawsuit against him over a camera that was on the mission where he went to the moon. He was the last man to walk on the moon, etc. And then when the mission was over, they dismantled everything, and they gave him this camera. He's had it all these years, and NASA said nothing about it. But now that he's come out and very publicly stated that, hey, you know what? ETs are visiting this Earth. NASA knows it. They need to drop all the stuff, all the nonsense, and just tell the truth. And the government needs to drop all their nonsense and just tell the people because, you know, the ETs have been visiting this Earth. And there's ET presence on the Earth. So he's been out there openly talking about it.
Well, and the thing that got him sued, I think you would, though, is because he wanted to sell the thing at auction.
Well, if they gave it to him, it's none of their business.
Right, but they're claiming now that they didn't.
Well, what they're claiming is that we always fill out papers and we can't find any such papers that say that this was given to him. But they remember, these are the same people who couldn't find any of the data tapes from the first moon landing.
Right.
And they were found in boxes stored under stadium seats in Australia.
Exactly.
Okay, so these are the same people that lost the moon landing. And they're going to go to court and think they're credible when they say, well, you know, we can't find any such paperwork, so it doesn't exist. Hey, they lost the whole dadgum moon landing.
Well, the way I look at that, though, Kevin, is this is an opportunity to get something into open court in the public sector and maybe be a step forward.
Well, it could be. You know, I think if I was Edgar Mitchell's defense attorney, I would mount a huge case on all and document all the things that NASA has lost. That's all you got to do. You go to court and say, you know, they're saying they can't find the paperwork. Well, okay, that's okay with us. They can't find the paperwork. Take a look at all the other paperwork they can't find, like Kecksburg.
Yeah. Well, I definitely agree that they've left themselves wide open. If somebody's got a strong right hand to throw right between their defense, they can get them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Actually, on this, I think NASA is pretty much outmatched. I really don't think they ought to climb into the ring here.
Do you think there's any possibility that they've opened themselves up to this on purpose?
Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Be an interesting scenario, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, who can... trying to fathom the mind of NASA is almost like trying to fathom the mind of God. Except in one case, you assume God is so brilliant you can never understand, and you assume NASA makes such dumb decisions you can never understand. So, you know...
You know, some of those dumb decisions have... caused the loss of life on two or three different occasions.
That is true.
All right, Kevin, I'll let you go so others can get in here and get into this discussion.
All right, Mike, thanks for the call.
Happy 4th of July to you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thank you. Happy 4th to you, too. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889 is the number for you to call and participate in tonight's show. If you live outside of the USA and you live outside of Canada, you can participate in this show by sending me a flash message or by calling us. If you want to send a flash message, go to my website, scroll down, and you'll see the picture about tonight's show. Right above it is the link that says flash message, but you must be outside of the USA or outside of Canada. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Oh, this is John from the Outer Branches of Hell.
Hello, John. How hot is it in Mesa, Arizona today?
We were lucky today. We only got up to 103 or 4.
Oh, it was you had a cold wave.
Yeah, 103 or 4 is cooler than 118, which we had 2 days ago.
Yeah. Did you go get your sweater?
If I thought taking clothes off would help the situation, I'd be running around stark naked.
Yeah, you know, listen, that's one of the reasons that I like cold weather. Because you can put on enough clothes to get warm. But
exactly.
When it's once it gets over 100 degrees Fahrenheit, once it's over 100 degrees, you can't take off enough clothes to get cool.
That's a fact. Especially this time of year when we're starting to phase into the monsoon and the humidity is going up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what's on your mind this evening, this 4th of July?
Well, listen, I was unable to get you at the beginning of the show, so I came in a little late, but I was caught at the end of the talking about the intelligence of different animals.
Uh-huh.
And I think that we pretty much always assumed that horses and dogs were pretty much able to be trained on verbal commands, not that they understood what we meant by it in an intelligent way, but they would repeat a certain action when we give it to them. But I think, for me anyway, there was a turning point. Well, we had dolphins too, and we recognized they had a language, but there was a turning point for me when the great ape Coco started to express emotion about a pet kitten that it had, you know, that had died.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get into the abstract of discussing emotions with an animal, You've got to take a step back and say, well, the great ape can't be the only one that expresses emotion. And like you said earlier, you know, other animals that have mourned over the loss of friends, you know, mates of some kind.
Yeah, elephants are notorious for that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And dogs, you know, will mourn the loss of their human companion sometimes for years.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen the video on YouTube about Christian the lion?
Yes. Oh, man, it tears at your heartstrings, doesn't it?
Yeah. Not only did Christian bond with these two humans that raised him, when they turned him loose in the wild, and he found a mate, and they had a family, he communicated with the mate and the kids not to attack these guys. And, you know, these guys were sitting around petting on the, you know, these lions, and Christian's the only one that had contact with them originally.
Right, there had to be communication of some kind there, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing when Christian came running towards him at the first moment. You know, there's got to be that thought in your mind, is this an attack or is he glad to see me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just one of the most phenomenal videos I've ever watched.
I've seen it probably dozens of times, and it still chokes me up every time you see it.
Well, I think that animals are tapped in, you know, they are living, and, you know, they're tapped into the same consciousness that we're tapped into, and you've heard me probably say this. If you think of consciousness as gasoline, and then you have all the different animals in the animal kingdom and us, all of those are different automobiles. Okay, now a Volkswagen Bug uses gasoline, and so does a Ferrari. But they use it differently, and the Ferrari uses it far more efficiently and does more with it. But it's the same consciousness. It's the same gasoline. And I think consciousness kind of works that way. And I think they're tapped into the same consciousness we are. We use it differently than they do. But that, you know, they're still tapped in.
Well, you know that for years people have understood, probably thousands of years, that animals sense your emotion probably better than humans sense each other's emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And they know if you're angry and you're heading towards them that they need to give you a little more space.
That's true. That is true. Well, we live in a wondrous world. Yeah, what's the other thought?
The other thought was about the moon.
Uh-huh.
And if you recall that the moon is moving away from the Earth and has been for some time, we should gradually be, if it's on the normal rotation, the same rotation, and not being adjusted somehow, we should start seeing the edge creep around.
Yeah.
And we're not.
We're not. It is being adjusted.
Right. So there has to be something.
Yeah. Hey, John, do you want to hang on through this break?
Sure.
All right. We'll be back, folks, right after this.
I just listened to Kevin Smith's show and my IQ jumped 20 points.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and on the telephone with me is John from Arizona. John, we were talking about the moon, and something must be adjusting the rotation of the moon, because as it creeps farther out away from the Earth, if its rate of spin on its axis were not adjusted, it would not keep the same face towards the Earth.
Correct. It would creep around eventually, and I'm sure some smart scientist would point that out.
So what do you think? Is it artificial or?
Well, you know, it unless there's something about orbits that I don't understand, and I'm sure there's a lot, but it's from what I understand, you know, it's kind of like things are sitting out there, and the spin that it has is not necessarily related. We have planets that don't spin at all that have moons that go around them that spin, so one doesn't necessitate the other.
Okay, so what do you think? Is it an artificial satellite or what?
It is not artificial. It's being manipulated artificially.
Okay.
At this point.
So if it's being artificially manipulated, who's doing that?
Good question. Good question. There's a whole host of people out there, possibilities, but aliens are definitely part of it, and I don't know who else would have been, you know, because we've had people taking pictures or drawings of the moon and a face that points to us for hundreds of years anyway.
Uh-huh.
So something is up there. Call it alien, call it God and the design of Earth. And, you know, just call it black ops. Of course, they haven't been around that long.
Well, I stick with what I said. I think the moon is paranormal because there's no scientific explanation for what it's doing out there.
At least not one that they've shared with us.
Yeah, that's it. Not an explanation they've shared with us.
Because I know that we have several numerous geocentric satellites that we put up that require ongoing adjustments to keep them pointed in the direction that they need to be.
That is correct. That is correct. Okay, John, thanks for the call, man. Hope you have a happy 4th.
Right. You too.
All right, bye-bye. All right, the telephone lines are open, 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. At the top of the show, I talked with you about a couple of stories. If you want to talk about those, we can. Or we'll talk about what's on your mind within the scope of the strange and unexplained, all right? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
I want to thank you for the 4th of July special, the tribute to the flag that you had on earlier in the program.
Well, you're certainly welcome.
It got me to thinking. A couple years ago, I heard a guest on one of the shows. I don't know if it was your show or not, but he made mention that there's a difference to the American flag that has gold trim around it.
And that's correct.
I think these are only in federal buildings. Do you know anything about that?
Well, the American flag with the gold trim around it is under maritime or admiralty law. That's what it represents. And without the gold trim, it represents constitutional law.
Well, how would this come into play then, where in the federal buildings they always have the gold trim flag?
As I understand the argument, and I do not claim that I do understand it because it's not something I've spent a lot of time studying, but I have read it. As I understand the argument, admiralty or maritime law is what rules the courts, and the Constitution has very little sway there. You know, when you go into a courtroom, there's always an area where people can sit and observe court. And then in front of that, between them and the judge, between them and the prosecutors, there is a fence, a bar, okay? And it's got a little door. And when you get called to testify, you have to step through that little gate in the fence, and then you step up to the witness stand. Before you cross that bar, you're not in the realm of the admiralty. The flags are right up next to the judge. Once you step through there, you're now under the maritime law instead of the Constitution. That's the argument that I have heard. And again, perhaps that's not correct, but it's I have read that.
Well, that sounds a little conspiratorial there.
Wait a minute.
Okay.
If something's true, it's not a conspiracy. And it is true that there is a corporation called the United States of America, and then there is a constitutional republic, and they are separate. It is true that the Federal Reserve is the bankroll of the corporation, and that the IRS is the collection agency of the corporation. Now, that's not conspiracy. That's in the documents that founded these things.
I recall reading where Woodrow Wilson said that that was the worst mistake he ever made, was giving the Federal Reserve the ability to regulate our money supply.
He said, yes. He wrote, "I have destroyed my nation."
Yeah. Okay, on a different note also, during the breaks when you have the little video clips, there's one actor I always see. He's the pizza delivery guy. He's the chauffeur. Today he was the cowboy.
Yeah.
Who is this individual?
This individual is one of our listeners, and he's a member of our members area. His name is Stuart Lambie. And the little boy that appears with him is his son, and they live in Japan. And they create those videos for us.
That's quite entertaining.
Yeah, they're good, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Very good.
Yeah, very creative, always interesting. But Stuart does a great job with that. And his son, what a star.
Well, thank you, Kevin. You have a good 4th of July.
All right, thanks much. 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889, and the telephone lines are open, all right? As I have said a couple of times now, but we have people joining us at various times during the show, our guest for this evening suddenly became ill yesterday, spent most of the night in the emergency room, and is recuperating today, so she requested that we postpone till Wednesday. We're going to give it a shot Wednesday and see if she's feeling up to it, and we're going to do that show that you were expecting tonight, but we did have to postpone it because of unexpected things. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. Rick in California.
Hi, Rick.
I've heard a number of people talking about the moon. You know, there's no rotation in it. I had a thought of what's holding it in place. As it was formed, you know, tens of thousands of years ago, this side that faces us all the time has a lot more iron ore on it, which the magnetism of the Earth is holding that side towards us all the time.
It could be.
You know, that's the only thing I could come up with, because I don't think it's a satellite that's been brought in by aliens, and you know, it's a regular planet that's got stuck in the orbit and held there.
Yeah, but we don't know how it got stuck for a couple of reasons. First, let me say this. There are very ancient writings that talk of people who were alive before the moon was here. So there was a time when there was no moon, and there were people alive at that time. And then the moon showed up. Okay, the second mystery is, how did the moon get into this orbit? Because it's too big to be captured by our gravitational field. Our gravitational field is not that strong. We think it is, but it's not. If you put some iron filings on a piece of paper, gravity is holding them down. But you can take a toy magnet and just pass it above those iron filings, a toy magnet, not a strong one, just a toy magnet, and you'll see iron filings fly up into the air and toward that magnet. So our gravity, you know, in other words, a toy magnet is more powerful than gravity. It can cause things to, it can cause gravity to have no effect on certain things.
Yeah, that's quite amazing when you consider the mass of the Earth itself.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, you know, you've read a lot more history and ancient history than I have, and I never knew anything about the moon. I'd never been there before,
mm-hmm.
and then just showed up out of the blues. But, I don't know, that's the only thing I could come up with, Kevin, is why there's no rotation and one side is held to face the Earth all the time.
Well, my point was in support of what you said.
Yeah.
That the, you know, one of the mysteries is how did it get into this orbit? Maybe it is the magnetic field rather than gravity.
Yes.
Maybe it is.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
You know, I've had some discussion with a couple of people, and they seem to think that you know, maybe there were aliens that brought it in here and left it there, but. Boy, you know, you don't know unless you're there to see it, or you know somebody that you know can tell you, yeah, that's exactly what happened. So, anyway, that's all I had to say about it, Kevin. I'll let you get on to the next caller.
Okay, Rick. Very interesting. Good point. And happy 4th of July. Yeah, you know, the deal about did aliens bring the moon here? Is it an artificial satellite? Yeah, there's some pretty good evidence that, when I say good, I mean it's very interesting, maybe even a bit compelling, that tells us that perhaps the moon is artificial. It doesn't tell us conclusively, does it? And therefore, we have to speculate. All right. One of the speculations has been that a planet the size of Mars collided with the Earth and blew all this stuff out into space, and as it began to coalesce, it coalesced into what is the moon. One of those theories says that happened in under 30 days. The problem with that is if that happened, how is it that the moon rocks are older than the Earth? We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we've only got just a few minutes left. We're on final approach, just a few minutes left in tonight's show. Kind of an impromptu open line. As a matter of fact, tomorrow night is what I had planned to be open line, and so it will be. It will be open line tomorrow night, but you're going to what you're going to need to do between now and then is get your minds all geared up and ready and your fingers limbered up and ready to call. I've got other stories to throw onto the table tomorrow night, other articles to discuss, and some pictures from Mars, actually from Mars Spirit Rover. From Mars Spirit Rover. Imagine, it's dead now. Mars Spirit Rover is no more. It did yeoman service, but it's dead now. But there is a photograph from the Spirit Rover that has some very curious objects in it, and I'm going to present those tomorrow night. We'll talk about those. Also, tomorrow night, well, I'll let that be a mystery. But we've got some great stuff lined up to talk about, and then we'll open the phone lines, and you can give us a call and talk about those things or what's on your mind within our genre. The telephone number, we are open line tonight due to the illness of the guest. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. And if you're outside the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can either call that number, or if you don't want to make the international long-distance call, what you can do is the flash message option. You simply go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and scroll down. You'll see the picture about tonight's show, and right above that picture is a link that says flash message. That's so folks who would have to make an international call to call us. It's very expensive to do that, and sometimes people do, and we're always glad when they do, but we understand it's very expensive, so we have the flash message option for you. You can choose either one, the telephone or the flash message. It is there for you. Here in the United States of America, it is our birthday today, and it's the day we celebrate our birthday. And I want to say to all of those who are living in the United States of America and all of our men and women in uniform around the world, happy birthday, America. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. This is Mark from Los Angeles.
Hello, Mark.
Well, I wanted to say, in fact, it was perfect timing because you mentioned Independence Day. And I wanted to thank you for playing that at the beginning of the show. I didn't get a chance to watch it on video. I was outside listening to the radio outside at the time. But I think everybody needs a recharge. And this is a perfect time in our history where us as Americans need a recharge. And that was perfect. I even got a little tear in my eye when you played that.
Well, I'll tell you something. You've heard me say this, Mark. I'm not religious, but I'm not an idiot. And, you know, there are people who these days have tried to erase all mention of the role that was played by churches and by Christians in the founding of this country. I'm not a religious person, but the people that founded this country in large part were. And I'm not, you know, I think you give credit where credit is due. The facts are the facts, and the facts are that at the beginning, the people that founded this country were in vast majority very religious people. And, you know, one of the things, although that piece that I played was not particularly a religious piece, one of the things that he said was a quote from George Washington, the first president of this country. And George Washington said, the difference between an American Christian and all other people is that he prefers, if necessary, and this is my paraphrase, to die on his feet rather than to live on his knees. And, you know, it was that spirit that got them through that war and got this independence won.
Yeah. And, you know, as you know, I've been in the Air Force, or was in the Air Force for 20 years, retired probably about 12 years ago now. And a lot of Americans do not know the symbol of the flag, you know, like what the red's for, the blood that was spilled, and the white stripes, and the blue background, and the stars, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I challenge everybody, get on the internet and find out what that is, you know, what the flag means. And because every time, you know, I'm out someplace and we have, they do the the national anthem or something, you know, I'd stare at that flag and I look at those things and remember the men who and women who died, you know, giving us this country. And I get choked up every time, even to this day. And I think more Americans need to do that so we can take this country back and make it what it was.
Yeah, you know, we do pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic for which it stands. The problem is between the flag and the republic, there is now something called the corporation.
Yeah, that's what I was meaning, you know.
Yeah. And the corporation is dying. And good riddance to it. I am for the republic. And I am for the flag. And the corporation that has gotten in between the two has messed up things royally, not only for us, but for a whole lot of the world. And, you know, the sooner it goes out of business, the better. By the way, at the end of that piece, I played the part about July the 4th and how we got our Star Spangled Banner. At the end of it was a reading of a part of a speech from Patrick Henry, one of the founding fathers. Do you realize that that speech given by Patrick Henry would have him branded as an enemy of the state and as a national security risk in the United States of America today? He would be on the no-fly list, and he would be on the Department of Homeland Security list of possible terrorists.
Are we all?
Everyone who believes in the Republic and the flag and the Constitution, yes, we are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now the Department of Homeland Security is quite concerned about and gearing up against, are you ready? Radical Christian groups.
What?
Yeah.
I guess they have nothing better to do.
They do. They really do. There are plenty of toilets in Washington, D.C. that need to be scrubbed.
I think we need to look at our own people on the Hill first, because they're probably the biggest crooks than anybody. Did I say that out loud, by the way?
You did. You said it right out loud. You're on the list now.
Oh, I've been on the list ever since I put you on our station.
Well, I am pro-American. I am 100% for the United States of America, the Constitutional Republic. But the fiction of the corporation, I'm not for that. Mark, thanks for the call. The end of the show is upon us. Ladies and gentlemen, my friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.